Hey, this is WWE Hall of Famer Kurt Angle, and you're listening to the HTC Wrestling Podcast with Justin C. and Cam D. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
We are at Radio City Music Hall on the carpet of the NBC Universal Upfronts, where WWE has a huge presence here this year. Joining me now, Ronda Rousey. Ronda, congratulations on your success at WrestleMania.
Thank you. Yeah, it was quite a debut, very high pressure, a lot of eyes on it, but it's also in the past. I have a lot of challenges ahead of me, and I have a lot of hard work and dedication that I need to put into this, but luckily I have some great examples
of
hard work
you.
And dedication right here.
Well, we have a lot of things in common, but can you do this?
Woo! Wow, that's good. I can try.
All right. Woo! Yes,
it's
good.
So raspy. I don't know how to work on it.
You can kind of woo, I guess. But can you do this? Can you be Raw Women's Champion?
And I hope so, but only time will tell.
Girl, there ain't nothing better than the present.
What do you mean?
I have an obligatory title defense at Money in the Bank, and I'm challenging you.
That's a huge honor, and I appreciate that, but I've only had one match, and I think there's a lot of other women that deserve that title shot before me.
That might be the case, but I'm not challenging them. I'm challenging you.
Do it. Do it. Well, this is quite unexpected, but I accept your challenge.
That's right. Here we go.
This is going to be good.
HTC Wrestling Podcast. It is Friday, May 18th. Once again, recording this on Friday afternoon. I am your host, Justin C., joined as always by my co-host, Cam, and we're here to talk about all of the news that broke in the wrestling world this week. Lots of stuff to get into, not only in the WWE, but also in regards to independent wrestling, New Japan as well. So we're going to get right into it today. Cam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. The weather's warming up. I mean, the baseball season's in full swing. My daughters aren't doing too good, but that means it's that time of the year again where the WWE is going to test around and then the indies are going to do everything they can to, sell out all their venues.
Yep. And speaking of that, right off the bat, we can go ahead and talk about All In, which, of course, I'm sure you know by now, is sold out for this coming September show. Tickets went on sale last Sunday. You know, a lot of people expected them to do good ticket sales in the beginning, you know, probably get a good chunk of the arena sold. But I don't think I've seen anybody predict that they were going to sell out within under an hour like they did. So kudos to everybody involved. I mean, I thought they'd sell out eventually, but I had no idea that they would sell out that quickly. I mean, I tried buying tickets myself. I went online a little before 4 o'clock to the Sears Center website. I got put in a virtual waiting room about 10 minutes in. I think the site crashed. At least I got kicked out of the waiting room myself and I couldn't get back to the site. But then luckily enough for me, I went back to the site right away and I was able to get right in there and get right into where I wanted to for tickets. So that ended up working out actually better than I think a lot of people, especially myself, expected. So I'm excited. Hopefully I get the time off from work and I can go. And like I said, This is just a good thing overall for not only the Young Bucks, for Cody, for Kenny Omega, for all of them, but also just for independent wrestling as a whole itself. I mean, you know, this goes to show you that you don't need a giant company's backing to go out and sell tickets. I know there are a lot of people doubting these guys, you know, that they wouldn't be able to sell anything at all, wouldn't be sell out. I thought they'd sell it out, and then they go and do this on their own. So kudos to all of them involved. I'm excited for the show itself. I think it's going to be a great big spectacle that's not WrestleMania, but it's going to be just a great show overall. I expect these guys to go all out, you know, all in, to put on such a great show itself. So I'm looking forward to it. I think these guys are going to have a good weekend in store. They respect their fans. They like their fans. And it's just a good thing overall for the wrestling scene to have something like this, where obviously these guys aren't going to be competition for the WWE right now, but for them to be able to go out and do this and sell out a 10,000 plus seat arena and go out there and, you know, do this on their own without anybody else, it's just a really, really great time for wrestling. It goes to show you that, hey, wrestling may be as popular as it's been since the Attitude Era, and it's going to be, hopefully this leads to more good things to come for pro wrestling.
Yeah, it's spectacle, I think, might be like an understatement. I think if you see anyone and they try to tell you that wrestling isn't cool anymore, or wrestling still is not cool, or wrestling's not relevant, I mean, All In sells out in 29 minutes and 36 seconds. The WWE stock is now trading above $50 a share, which is more than I had a list, but then I don't know. I didn't save on my notes, but the company is soaring. Pro wrestling itself, it's like a giant party. It's almost kind of like I almost had the idea of comparing it to Coachella. It's like you're going, not necessarily. It's kind of like the high school football game where you're going because all your buddies are going because it's like the cool thing to do. Wrestling is cool again. And, you know, kudos to the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes because they did take a financial risk. I don't think they ever thought that they weren't going to sell out and they weren't going to, you know, get all the money back that they had to put down for, I'm assuming, a deposit, security, and all the things that went into running the venue. They had to know going into it that they were going to get that money back. I don't think they would have really took that leap of faith if they thought they could only draw, you know, a few thousand. They could draw a few thousand by themselves in Chicago on an ROH show. So I don't think they really ever were afraid of not selling out. I think this is how you're going to, Justin mentioned the NWA title, Cody Rhodes and stuff. I think that's how we get Flip Gordon on the show. We never really talked much about Flip. I'm not the biggest fan of him. He has no charisma. He's an average wrestler. He's only been wrestling for a few years. So, you know, you got to give him time. But I think just because he gets the rub from the Young Bucks and Cody and stuff like that, and because he's in Being the Elite, everyone just puts him into this category where, I mean, if he signed NXT tomorrow, he'd be released in 6 months. But I think that's how you get him on the show. I think eventually he's going to wrestle Nick Adonis somewhere down the line, Magnus, whoever, however you want to call him. He's going to wrestle down the line somewhere. I think Flip Gordon goes into All In as the NWA World Champion. And you have Billy Corgan, like, usher him to the ring. And you have David Lagana making his YouTube stuff. I mean, they're really pushing this NWA stuff. I mean, David Lagana and Billy Corgan are pretty much, you know, All In, I guess, if you want to say, in the NWA stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's just I was pretty confident it was going to sell out the day of what I took. I had to work on Mother's Day when the tickets went on sale, which I thought was like, you guys are kind of a jerks for putting tickets on sale Mother's Day. So I was working at my job, and then, you know, I took my lunch break and I went to go buy tickets and they're already gone. And I was like, wow, you know, but I think it kind of goes, you know, especially from being out here in Southern California and living in the PWG environment, if you will, them selling out it didn't really shock me as fast as it sold out, shocked me. But, I mean, like I said, PWG, I mean, you're only looking at about a 400-person room, which is not very many tickets. But when those tickets sell out in, you know, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, I kind of already had this feeling, you know, the Young Bucks are almost at their peak. And the more and more that they talk about, you know, it'd be dumb for them to join the WWE and all these things, it kind of leads me to believe that once they run this show, and even if they do an all-in two and they try to run, and they run Staples Center, which is with floor seating, I think about 17,000, which I think they could totally do in an LA market. What's really next for them? You know, Justin, we talked about weeks ago that, you know, they kind of, Justin, you know, fantasy booked an angle where they kick Cody Rhodes out of the Bullet Club at All In and stuff like that. It's like, to continue this story, it's almost as if they've been building it for years, and All In is like the mecca of the show. It just kind of leads me to wanting more into what's next. I mean, congratulations all around for their success and for doing it. You know, it's a great thing. I think it's the first time a non-WWE or WCW promotion sold out 10,000 tickets. I think it said 1995. I believe I read an article about Lucha. I believe CMLL or another Mexican promotion ran 10,000 people in Los Angeles in 1995. So yeah, just kudos to them. I think it's great for the business. You know, it's great that I've heard a few common people even like, you know, tell me that mostly WWE fans saying, you know, oh, did you hear about this All-In show? And I was like, yeah, I totally wanted to go, but, you know, it's sold out and you know, I'm not going to fly to Chicago to meet CM Punk. That's just not worth it. But yeah, just kudos to them. And just, you know, it just can, I don't know. I think that the next level, I mean, I just, at some point, we're going to have some sort of cross promotion between the Young Bucks and WWE. I just feel it at this point.
It will be interesting to see what exactly is next for all of these guys involved. I mean, you almost feel like they've outgrown Ring of Honor itself. And then as far as, like you said, the spectacle of this one-time show goes, it's, you know, it's cool to put on for once. Obviously, everybody wanted to go see it. It's sold out. But you do wonder what is going to happen next as far as, you know, if they do this show again. I mean, it'd be one thing if they were starting their own promotion off of this. It'd be like, okay, this could be like their big show every year fans can go out to, but this is pretty much just a giant, the biggest independent wrestling show in, you know, God knows how long. And you wonder if they try to do this again the following year, is it going to have the same success? Maybe they go to a different place like New York City or LA or Toronto, anything like that. But even still, you wonder, will people travel for this year in and year out as far as wanting to go and see all these guys that I'm sure a lot of these people even flying to Chicago have seen before on the indie scene. And as far as, you know, the StarCast thing goes, it's cool to do that as far as getting people to go see them. They have the, there's a Monday Night Wars debate between Bruce Pritchard and Eric Bischoff. There's a karaoke, I believe, with Marty Scurll. And just, of course, you know, unfortunately, poor Vince Russo can't obviously attend, even though he was announced and put up a big stink about it. I'm sure there's so many people that are going to this StarCast and All In that are so disappointed that they can no longer see the great Vince Russo go out there and talk his bullshit that I'm sure he'll talk for a good, you know, half an hour or so just to work the marks.
Yeah, just real quick on the Vince Russo thing before we left. When they announced Vince Russo, I mean, I kind of know Ryan Satan on not necessarily a personal level, but I've, you know, I've chatted with him a few times in person and stuff. I told him to challenge him to a debate, you know, make some money off of it. You know, he didn't respond to me. But, you know, Vince Russo, you know, everyone hates him and, you know, the whole him and Ryan Satan thing. And, you know, Vince Russo had nothing to do with, like, his crazy listeners, like, attacking Ryan Satan's girlfriend or whatever. But I told him, you know, if you challenge him to debate, people will go to that. You could charge $10 at the door and you guys could debate wrestling topics and you guys could both make money and make money off the wrestling business. You're in the wrestling business. But you know, that was just my 2 cents worth. But yeah, I mean, what's next, you know, I guess for the Young Bucks and stuff.
Moving on to more booming business-related stuff, that goes over to the WWE. There was a report that came out earlier this week. Obviously, the WWE's TV deal is coming up at the end of next year. And even though they were at the front of the NBC Universal big showing this past week where they show the NBC previews all of their new shows, first of all, before I get into that, thank you to NBC for picking up Brooklyn Nine-Nine for next year. That's my favorite show on TV right now. I was so mad when it got canceled, so I can't be mad at NBC for anything in the weeks ahead for picking up Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But there was a report that came out that said that the WWE is looking to shop SmackDown Live around to other networks after it was reported that USA Network and NBC Universal is doing everything to keep Raw on the USA Network, as so going so far as possibly paying up to 3 times as much as what the current WWE TV deal is. And that, of course, has caused the WWE stock price to soar as far as that goes. I believe it closed today over $50. It was over $50 a share at one point. So, and I know, Cam, I know you have money invested with WWE stock, so I'm sure you're happy about that. But I think it brings an interesting dynamic to SmackDown Live, you know, with it possibly moving over to another network. Not only another network, but another brand network altogether. I mean, if NBC Universal keeps Raw, it's one of those things where if SmackDown moves to Fox, maybe it goes to FS1. How exactly do you work that with as far as wrestlers go? Do you want certain wrestlers on certain brands? If John Cena shows up on USA in March in the build-up to WrestleMania, are they going to be upset if he shows up on Fox and FS1 in the build-up to SummerSlam? You know, I still would prefer WWE to try to get to Fox, not only because it's more exposure for them, but that also means it cuts Raw down to 2 hours. And if you've watched Raw over the last couple months and the 3-hour length it is, you would know how awful and how terrible it's been to try to watch Raw during this time. So it's an interesting business dynamic being able to put two different shows on two different branded networks. And of course, you know, USA, I'm sure, desperately wants to keep Raw. Their show lineup isn't that great. They got shows like Suits, and they had that big Biggie and Tupac documentary, but I mean, you watch SmackDown on Tuesdays, you see all the commercials for Grizzly and the Cromartes, so you know their shows aren't doing too well, but it's interesting to try to figure out. Obviously, WWE is making money right now, no matter how bad the ratings is or how bad their product is. It's all about making money in their bottom line, and their bottom line for the foreseeable future looks like it's going to be pretty good.
To me, it's like a double-edged sword. From the business aspect, I mean, it completely makes sense for them to get as much money as they can for Raw. I mean, if Fox wasn't going to pay them, I think, especially if they want to keep Raw 3 hours to stay on the USA Network, that's where they've been for forever. I think it just makes sense. From a wrestling fan perspective and from a, I mean, I guess a talent perspective, the possibility of SmackDown being on Facebook Live or ESPN Plus or FS1 that no one really has unless you have DirecTV, you pay the, you know, the upper tier price and or any of these other channels. Just like when it was on the Sci-Fi Network, it just, you know, it rubs me kind of the wrong way just as like a wrestling fan perspective. Considering the roster that they have on SmackDown, if they force Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, you know, Randy Orton, all these guys that are elite professional wrestlers to wrestle on, you know, an alternative channel that every American doesn't have access to, doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me to have Raw, which is the B show now, in my opinion, the just terrible to watch lately. If you have Raw on there and you say, okay, Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, Seth Rollins, and Ronda Rousey is the WWE, and you want to portray that image like these four individuals is everything that we want to do, what incentive do you have? Do you leave Daniel Bryan, who still, you know, to my knowledge, or I haven't seen anything online, hasn't signed a new deal, so he might just be filling out the WWE, and he might just be saying, okay, you know, weighing his options about what he wants to do. Because Daniel Bryan is, you know, he's one of those, you know, he's not a money seeker. He's not John Cena. He doesn't have multiple houses. He doesn't do those things. He's like a gardener vegan guy, you know. So him working for New Japan with his buddies is probably the same thing as getting a huge pop in the WWE. I'm sure he loves, you know, the pop he gets. And, you know, the travel schedule might be a little vigorous and things like that, especially with him having a new daughter. But, you know, I'm sure he loves staying in the WWE, but you're kind of saying – and like it goes back to like being a double-edged sword. You're kind of saying that the stock price is more important than talent morale, in my opinion. That's kind of what you're saying if you move SmackDown to FS1, ESPN Plus, any of these other options that I've heard. You know, Facebook Live, I would just – like if you're going to force Daniel Bryan to wrestle, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura on Facebook Live, like why are you guys – why do you even have them on the roster? It's like almost just because. So, yeah, it's just one of those things where, yeah, it's good for – business. You know, the WWE is making a lot of money. They made a lot of money in Saudi Arabia. Their stock price is going up. I'm sure Vince is happy. And when he's in his, I wouldn't even say twilight of his life, when he's thinking about the XFL and he's thinking about setting himself up for basically retirement and to live out his, you know, last 50 million years that he's going to live, that he's just not thinking about the day-to-days that Sami Zayn and all these guys are on this grueling travel schedule right now in Switzerland and, you know, everywhere else in Europe. Where they just, you know, morale can't be, you know, I'm sure they're getting paid well, but I don't know. At this point, like I said, it's a double-edged sword. I don't know how I feel about it. From a business perspective, if I worked for the WWE, yeah, it's a good thing. But also in the back of my mind, I'd have to worry about, hey, everyone that's on SmackDown that we have is great roster, and we're considering putting them on a network where probably only a million people are going to watch it because they just only million people have access to it.
Yeah, you talk about that grueling schedule, and it's something that I've always gone back to. I mean, I know there's never going to be a full or like a month or 2 month long off season in pro wrestling. That's just the nature of the pro wrestling business. And like you said, with the money they're making with TV deals, I'm sure the networks wouldn't be happy about it either. But I've always thought there could be a way where you could work in, you know, certain wrestlers getting like maybe 2-3 weeks off at a time and not worry about your product, you know, missing time. Like if Seth Rollins misses 2 to 3 weeks in May or June, and then you can have that covered with Roman Reigns, and then Reigns takes his 2 or 3 weeks off and Seth Rollins comes back, or he does it after SummerSlam, whatever. You know, you said you see these guys, and if you follow any wrestler on Instagram or Twitter right now, and you see them posting pictures and stuff on this European tour, you know that I'm sure while they're having fun, they can put as many filters and Snapchat filters on their posters as their pictures as they want, but you can tell these guys are just kind of struggling at some points. Keep going. They're probably exhausted. They're in the second leg. They're the last few days of this European tour, and I'm sure they're going out there and trying their best, but some of these guys are probably just, you know, completely drained as far as energy goes. I mean, just look at somebody like Charlotte Flair. You know, she was on the European tour. She comes back, gets her, she's getting her teeth knocked out. She comes back, gets that fixed, goes to New York, does that NBC Universal thing, does something else in New York as well, then flies back to Europe for a week to finish the tour. Now is going back when the tour is over. So I definitely think some kind of off season at some point is needed. I mean, but I'm sure with the money they're making off TV deals, that's not coming anytime in the near future. But as far as morale and energy booster goes, resting these nagging injuries that I'm sure a lot of these wrestlers have, I'm sure it's something that they would appreciate at some point, getting to spend a couple weeks with their families. But with what they're making on the TV deal and all the money that comes in from that, I doubt it's something that we're going to see anytime in the near future.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of under the impression, I think 2 weeks is a good time. You get through WrestleMania, you get through like the blow-offs of WrestleMania, you go through a European tour because that's where they're going to make their extra money, and I'm sure that, you know, the talent gets paid pretty well and all those things when they do the European tours. Then you come home. I think 2 weeks is good. You come home, everyone gets 2 weeks off. You hype up just on social media and everything. In 2 weeks, you know, Raw and SmackDown, we're going to have Money in the Bank qualifiers, Money in the Bank's in 3 weeks after that or whatever, however, whatever time frame it would become. You do that. 2 weeks, I think, is a good enough time. That gives everyone two weeks at home. Probably will get a lot of wrestlers anxious, considering they're probably only used to being home for a day or two at a time. 2 weeks, you know, especially with people that have wives and husbands and kids and things like that. You give them 2 weeks off, let them, like Justin said, recuperate a little bit, let them get some treatment, let them get them some R&R, let them freshen it up, you know, because you can see the wear and tear of the grind of being a WWE superstar. But yeah, I mean, one of those things where the WWE, you know, it's a business, so they're gonna wrestle, and I think a lot of the guys are, you know, they understand what they're doing. Kevin Owens just signed a new deal, so he knows what he's in for. He has two kids and a wife, but he knows, you know, he's signing this new 5-year deal because he wants to take care of his family for the rest of his life. He isn't like a drinker or any of those things. He's not a party guy. So I'm assuming Kevin Owens has stacked a lot of cash here in the last, you know, I think this is his third or fourth year fully now. A lot of times passed. So Kevin Owens has been the WWE for like 5 years now, considering his NXT time. Well, that's pretty crazy to think about. But yeah, it's just one of those things where, you know, some people can enjoy it. You know, like Justin talked about the Instagram things, you know, Sami Zayn was in Switzerland and things, and he was just, you know, he could kind of sub posting about how like they have no time to like really do anything, and this is all he could really do in a couple hours and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, some people are down for it and some people aren't. You kind of just, that's kind of a way to weed out the week, I guess, if you will. But yeah, I'm totally in favor, you know, especially from a fan perspective. If you didn't have Raw for 2 weeks, I think after that second week, you'd be like, okay, you know, Raw's coming back. Everyone's a little fresh. You know, you start over in New York or wherever they want to start, and you start the whole freaking circus all over again until WrestleMania.
Moving on now to the big storyline news of the week, and of course that's coming out of that NBC Universal thing I talked about earlier on the show. And if you listen to the clip at the beginning of the show for the challenge, it is the fact that Ronda Rousey will be challenging Nia Jax for the Raw Women's Championship at Money in the Bank in a few weeks. Like I said, if you listen to that clip, and I'm sure if you're listening to the show you have, it was probably the most cringeworthy challenge kind of thing I've seen in a very long time. I mean, I know they only had one take to get that down because of everything that was going on at the red carpet kind of thing, but they still came off so bad. I mean, the challenge from Nia, Ronda saying, I've only had one match, I shouldn't accept this, you know, Charlotte saying, you can't pass up this opportunity, and then Ronda accepting it and Charlotte come in and saying, this is going to be fun, and but a really bad woo at the end, you know, everything about that was just bad. I can't believe they replayed it twice on Raw. And now just getting to the actual match itself, I mean, there's no good outcome to me at all for this match. You can't have Nia Jax beat Ronda Rousey clean because that just kind of kills Ronda Rousey's momentum. Even if you were to do it, I mean, I guess if you have Stephanie McMahon involved, it's not really clean, but that still kills that. Nia Jax is pushed as a babyface. She's going to get booed out of the building in Chicago by Ronda Rousey because everybody's going to cheer for her. If Ronda Rousey wins clean, you have the risk of fans possibly turning on her at some point because she's getting the title so quickly compared to women like Sasha Banks and Bayley who are on the roster that haven't had that opportunity yet. And then, of course, that would kill Nia Jax momentum, who they tried to build up over the last few months as this big anti-bullying, be a star type of girl. And if you do some kind of cheap DQ finish, which is where I think they're going, if you have somebody like Natalya cost Ronda the title, it just kind of lessens the match. I mean, it seems like this was kind of the idea we talked about last week, how it looked like they were going to maybe having Ronda versus Mickie James, and then building up to Ronda versus Natalya, maybe at something like SummerSlam. And now that seems to have gotten scrapped completely out the window. And it seems like Vince just woke up on Monday saying, hey, we got to do this. Or Stephanie McMahon was like, hey, I'm the leader of the women's revolution, and I want this to happen at this NBC Universal thing. It just seems like bad planning overall. I mean, the match itself with Ronda Rousey, you want her to be in the ring with somebody like a Mickie James or a Natalya, the veterans of the women's division, who can walk her through, lead her through a good match, bump like crazy for her. So you put her in the ring with Nia Jax, who injured Alexa Bliss's shoulder, not as bad as people thought, but still injured it. She separated Bayley's shoulder, I believe, at one point, throwing her into the barricade. She dropped Charlotte at least twice on her head in a match on Raw last year. So it just seems like it's a possibility, and all this is a recipe for a disaster. And in the end, I don't think anybody's coming out of this positively at all. There's no positive outcome where you can say, okay, that match worked, this is good. There's just nothing good, because all of the negatives about any outcome outweigh any of the positives. And Cam, I know you talked about, we talked earlier in the week, how you said you pretty much said that you had the same feelings as I did as regarding this match, and it's just bad timing, and it's something that shouldn't have been done at all whatsoever this soon.
Well, I mean, I guess to start out with the promo, I think the fact that they only had one chance, I didn't know they only had the one chance at it. I mean, I guess I give them a little bit of leeway since they only had one go at it, since they were doing it like on a live red carpet, which was kind of stupid. They could have easily pre-taped it somewhere, had some carpet, make it look like they're on the carpet, get a couple extras to make it seem like they're photographers. Could have done a lot of things. You know, the fact that they just like did it on the fly, like guerrilla style, if you will, kind of, I mean, this is a company that's trading, their stock's trading about $50 an hour or $50 a share, and you don't have the wherewithal to be like, we should pre-tape this and get red carpet and extras and stuff. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Just going into it and Ronda being like, I don't deserve it. And it was just, I don't know. Ronda Rousey is not a good talker. I mean, everyone is just on her bandwagon. She looked like a million bucks at WrestleMania. No, Stephanie and Triple H made Ronda Rousey look like a million bucks at WrestleMania. You guys have it miscued. I think it's just one of those things where, like, yeah, I just kind of agree, Justin, that they wanted like a big thing. I mean, Money in the Bank is, in my opinion, the number five pay-per-view. I think if they were only to do five pay-per-views a year, there's obviously the big four, and then you can have Money in the Bank somewhere in the summertime like they'd usually do it. Makes the most sense. Get rid of all the rest of the pay-per-views. But that's for another discussion. But I don't know. I just, like you said, just Ronda's either going to – I don't know. Is she going to win? If she wins, like I said, Nia Jax, they shouldn't be nowhere near each other. It's almost as if Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, once let them have their – time away from each other, keep them as far apart as possible. You're trying to build Nia up as this be a star person, which I think is so weird now that after every match she, you know, does it for, you know, for the bullies and all the whatever crap that, you know, she says after her promos on after Raw matches. So you're setting them both up for failure, like Justin said, in my opinion as well. You should be keeping them far apart from each other. If you want to keep Nia as a legitimate threat or a legitimate, you know, badass or a legitimate babyface in the WWE as like a top number one for here the next 5-6 months, then she shouldn't be wrestling Ronda Rousey. She should be, you know, separating Becky Lynch's shoulder or, you know, Bayley's shoulder or anything else to make her look stronger. Have her, you know, beat up Dana Brooke for a couple of weeks or something like that to make her look good. Instead, you have two people who aren't very good at cutting promos to a build for a title match that, you know, frankly, like, I just don't have any mood to want to watch the match at all, because I just can't get past the fact that they couldn't come up with something better. I mean, even putting Ronda in the Money in the Bank match and having Natty push her off the ladder or something like that to screw her over, and that's how you get to it, because Ronda, you know, technically lost a match, but she didn't lose the match. Everyone else looks fine in a Money in the Bank type of scenario match, because only the winner looks good. Everyone else doesn't look weak because they all have their moments of shine and things like that, where you could tease Ronda winning, and then, like Justin said, you can have her and Natty go for a little while. I think they'd probably want a much bigger match between Ronda Rousey at SummerSlam besides Natty. No disrespect to Natty, but I think they would want something a little bigger. I kind of think now that if they're going to kind of, you know, get Ronda, put the strap on Ronda Rousey, that I think we might get her and Charlotte much quicker than WrestleMania next year. We might get her. I mean, I'm almost at the point where it's only going to be her and Charlotte at SummerSlam, or maybe her and Asuka at SummerSlam. But yeah, it just screams being rushed. I mean, they're just rushing. They just, you know, they're building up Nakamura and AJ Styles, and they're letting them continue. But just with Ronda Rousey, it's got to be a slow burn. I mean, I haven't really seen any video of the European tour, but she's working like a 6-women tag match, and I'm sure she gets her spots. And I think she, you know, put someone in the arm bar. I'm not sure who it was, Dana Brooke or someone in an arm bar, and made him tap in like 5 seconds. That's pretty much what Ronda Rousey matches should be until she gets better. I mean, you don't expect Braun Strowman to go out there and have a 30-35 minute classic. Why are they expecting Ronda Rousey to go out there and have a 10-15 minute solid match when her, you know, it just screams rushed. They're just riding the high of making money, and I think they just want to say, here's one of our marquee matchups. Sign up for the WWE Network for free for the first month, and watch Ronda Rousey win the Raw Women's title.
So that match is obviously the main talking point right now, Money in the Bank. You also have the Money in the Bank ladder match starting to kind of take shape, where you got 7 people in the match itself. You have Kevin Owens, Bobby Roode, one of the members of the New Day, because they beat the Bar in a match where one of them get to qualify for. They haven't picked yet who the member of the New Day is going to be. You have Braun Strowman, you have Finn Balor, you have The Miz, and you have Rusev. So that leaves you with one spot that's going to be determined on SmackDown this coming Tuesday, where you have Samoa Joe taking on Big Cass for the final spot. So looking at it, just kind of trying to pick out favorites for before we get in any storylines or whatsoever. I mean, I think if you're looking at two guys, I mean, if anybody needs, I think Miz is somebody obviously who has been doing his thing now for a while now. He's been kind of on a hot streak. He's having good wrestling matches. His promo ability is still top notch, just all without not taking out any paternity leave to go take care of his new daughter, which is Maryse is doing. But he's somebody with the obvious story where you got Daniel Bryan, where you can see a situation where Miz cashes in on Daniel Bryan, and then you build up to that match down the road. Of course, you know, I would love to see Rusev do it. I would have no problem even with Rusev and Lana possibly holding the Money in the Bank briefcase, although that would be interesting because Lana is not that great of a wrestler, so who knows. But there's opportunities there for a lot of guys involved, but a lot of these guys just don't even really need it. I mean, Kevin Owens is somebody that I just think is kind of there to have the match. Bobby Roode shouldn't win it. Braun Strowman's not somebody who should be doing the briefcase. I mean, what do you think, Cam? I know this match, obviously, every year, it just seems like a one-time off thing, but who do you think you had to pick if you had a favorite right now as far as the Money in the Bank goes with these 7 guys?
Well, I mean, before I get into any of that, I think the men's Money in the Bank match is just going to be a giant clusterfuck and like 8 people. I mean, they might as well just let all 3 members of the New Day be in there. Screw it at this point. Like, if there's already 8, they might as well let it be 10, you know? Like, at this point, you know, just let Kofi do some crazy stuff. Let Xavier do that stupid Macho Man wannabe elbow off the side. I hate that freaking move, man. Xavier Woods just rubs me the wrong way. I don't care how much of a dork or nerd he is in real life. At this point, I mean, it'd be kind of funny to see Braun climb up and win it. I don't see Braun winning it, which, again, is just like they're doing everything in their power to try to treat this guy like another dude. I mean, they're treating him like he's 5'9 and 180 pounds in the cruiserweight division. That's how they're treating Braun Strowman. They're like, instead of looking at him and instead of Vince looking at him and seeing dollar signs, he should be looking at him and, you know, seeing WrestleMania headlining and put the strap on him. I mean, the guy says like 10 words. And he's more over than Roman Reigns will ever be. And I'll still argue that Roman Reigns has more charisma overall than Braun Strowman. But Braun Strowman, just for some reason, is just more over. I don't know. I mean, I could see a scenario with The Miz. I mean, I don't know who last minute they're going to put in there. I mean, I still do not want – I mean, I don't think they're going to put Daniel Bryan in there. I think – I'm assuming him and Big Cass are going to continue their feud where Big Cass is going to, you know, say he won even though he lost. And I don't think he really understands how losing works. But that's for hopefully we're going to talk about that here soon. But yeah, at this point, I mean, my early favorite, maybe The Miz. I mean, at this point, I mean, I kind of like the fact, I mean, he's been the man for a while, even though he's, you know, been the IC champion, all these things. He hasn't been a WWE champion in years, right? It's been years and years since he's been a WWE champion or a Universal champion, anything like that. I mean, I'm assuming we're not going to see The Miz versus Brock Lesnar because that would just be mean to The Miz. But I could see at some point once they decided, if they decide at this point to put the title on Roman Reigns, to see The Miz come after Roman Reigns for the title, I mean, that's pretty good money, especially once we get after, like, The Miz and Daniel Bryan and all that stuff.
And then, of course, you have the women's Money in the Bank as well. Right now, you only have 4 of the 8 participants left. You have, or announced, I should say, you have Charlotte, Alexa Bliss, Ember Moon, and Becky Lynch. Thank God Becky Lynch won that qualifying match this past Tuesday on SmackDown, because if it, she wouldn't have, I mean, Becky Lynch is somebody who I've talked about numerous times on the show as being underused, underappreciated. She should be somebody who I think could actually benefit from winning this briefcase. I mean, I know lots of times faces don't end up winning the briefcase, but I think she's somebody who definitely could benefit from winning it. And of course, there's the obvious story there too with Charlotte, and that's something I've talked about before, where Charlotte wins the Money in the Bank and cashes in on Ronda Rousey at a joint pay-per-view, maybe at the Royal Rumble, and turns out to be the hired gun of Stephanie McMahon, and that's how you build to their WrestleMania match that's been rumored. You, like I said earlier, you had Lana taking on Billie Kay this Tuesday on SmackDown for another spot that I'm sure Dave Meltzer is ready to give the full 6-7-star treatment to, because I'm expecting that match to be a technical classic. But they've had a lot of the women wrestle so far already for these spots. I'm assuming Natalya's probably going to get a spot. Maybe Naomi's going to end up getting a spot. The winner of the inaugural Women's Royal Rumble, who doesn't end up doing anything with it afterwards, of course, that's typical with a lot of the Andre the Giant Battle Royal Trophy as well. So who knows? But the women's, I think, obviously, they're going to sprinkle it with the veteran women as well. And I think it's, and you look at the other people so far, I think it's too early for Ember Moon. Alexa Bliss is still got the heel heat. She doesn't need to win that this quickly. So I think you're looking at a situation where it's probably going to be either Becky or Charlotte. And if it's Charlotte, I think it automatically leads you to building up to WrestleMania. And if it's Becky, it's maybe, hey, maybe they're giving her a chance to kind of shine on SmackDown. Maybe she ends up turning heel on Charlotte by cashing in the title. Because obviously you have Asuka and Carmella taking on one another as well for the SmackDown Women's Live Women's Championship. So there's a lot going on in both women's divisions right now. And again, anything time like that, you have multiple storylines going on there, it's a good thing.
I mean, as far as the women, I mean, I'm starting to kind of agree with you with the whole, with the Becky Lynch thing, Justin. I think that, you know, they've kind of been treating her so bad that, you know, last podcast or 2 weeks ago, whenever we talked about her, I kind of said that she's just going to be like that baby face that's somewhere in the low card. And she kind of just, at any point could lose to any heel, or at some point could be elevated, you know, if they really wanted to. I could see her winning it and her just riding it out for a year. I mean, her probably, as of today, you know, here in May, I think if she did win it, she would probably be unsuccessful, like the Damian Sandow, where she goes and tries out with someone else and has a great match and then, you know, just ends up losing it and, you know, kind of just flounders back down. I would kind of be into it as, you know, if Billie Kay or Peyton Royce, one of them two, get into it. I mean, I could kind of see a scenario where they win it and hold it together and every week come out and cut promos, kind of like Carmella, to keep them, you know, elevated and keep them on TV, not really having to wrestle or anything like that, teasing them, you know, cashing in the thing. I mean, I don't really see them splitting them up soon, but I'm assuming if Billie Kay wins her match against Lana, which I would think that she will win, that her and Billie Kay maybe somewhere along, or Peyton Royce, eventually split up and kind of battle over the SmackDown Women's Championship. But at this point, yeah, it's kind of too early. I'm kind of curious to see what they're going to do. Obviously, you know, we're going to have the Ronda match, and then you're going to have Asuka versus Carmella, where, I mean, I think Carmella is probably going to keep the title. I mean, she's going to have some other little sneaky win. I mean, I think they're kind of warming up to the idea of her being the champion for a little while. She's done pretty good. All of her promos have been pretty decent. The Carmella, whatever it was last past Tuesday, was pretty decent. So I think, you know, you could see that Asuka doesn't necessarily have to be the champion to continue to be over, but if she doesn't win it sooner than later, she's going to start to borderline on that Braun Strowman territory where it's like, okay, you built this person up as a badass and now they never win the big matches. It's almost like Bray Wyatt 3.0. Yeah, kind of too early to tell. I mean, I'd be all happy for Becky Lynch, because since the four horsewomen, the original four horsewomen, have come up to the main roster, she has just done absolutely nothing.
And, you know, I talk about Carmella. It wouldn't be briefly touched about it last week, but the fact that Big Cass apparently has some heat on him backstage from a few weeks ago, where he did that segment with the little person on SmackDown. He apparently was told to either big boot or beat him up, and then he asked if he could do both to whoever was producing the segment, which he told him no, and then he went to Vince McMahon and asked him to do it, and he said no, and then he ends up doing it anyway. And then that kind of resulted, you know, this came out, I believe it was after the Daniel Bryan Big Cass match at Backlash, where Daniel Bryan pretty much squashed Big Cass in about 6 or 7 minutes. They let Big Cass get some of his heat back afterwards, but then a couple weeks, this past Tuesday on SmackDown, they did the whole thing where Daniel Bryan was getting interviewed. Big Cass comes out with his big giant, I call it a big giant doofus walk, where it seems like he's trying to pretend like he's cool, but it just comes off as nothing cool whatsoever. And then afterwards, just get completely beaten up by Daniel Bryan. And it's something that you don't really see ever from a babyface like that, especially when a smaller babyface like Daniel Bryan beating up somebody as big as Big Cass. So you have that going on. You have Big Cass taking on Samoa Joe this coming Tuesday on SmackDown for the last Money in the Bank spot, where I'm assuming Samoa Joe is going to win there. So, of course, you can go back to the Big Cass Daniel Bryan well, which they could do at Money in the Bank if you want to get Daniel Bryan on there, but it seemed like this past Tuesday was kind of the definitive, you know, statement for that feud. And then, of course, you know, you have Enzo, who's been cleared. It's a big news story for the whole tandem. You have Enzo getting cleared of his rape charges this week as well. So I don't expect him to be in the WWE anytime soon, considering all of the rumored problems he had with a lot of people backstage and how he just rubbed people the wrong way. But going back to Big Cass, I think, you know, he's somebody that people were kind of like praising his work as far as when he came back from his promos go, but I just wasn't buying into it. And the fact that, you know, Enzo kind of covered for him when they were a tag team as far as their promos go, so he didn't have to worry about that. And even his in-ring work before he left, and obviously the guy was out for a long time with a knee injury, so he's still probably working off the ring rust, but he hasn't shown me anything impressive enough to make me think this guy in any of his WWE career is going to be a big-time player for the WWE down the line. In 2 or 3 years, he's going to be a guy, a main eventer at pay-per-views. I just haven't seen that at all from Big Cass, and you almost wonder if maybe if his whole heart is into this at all. But I mean, who would have ever thought, you know, 2 years ago Carmelo would be the most successful out of all of those three in the WWE? So there's still room for improvement to Big Cass. I know he's been in WWE development for a while, but unless something changes in the next few months, I still just don't see any signs of him being a big time star or big time player for the WWE and down the line.
Well, I personally think the fact that he kind of brought up the little person thing this past Tuesday makes me kind of believe that the rumors of him being told not to do it and all this stuff, maybe not necessarily true, because if he worked that into his promo, or Road Dogg or Devon Dudley or whoever, you know, whoever his producer is for his segments, if they're kind of worked that into the promo, I mean, I kind of believe, you know, it's still pro wrestling, you know, Ryan Satan and all these, and Meltzer and everyone can confirm these things, but it's still pro wrestling. I mean, if Vince was really pissed off, I don't think Big Cass would have been on TV last week, even though he did take a beat down from a babyface like this and said, which never really happens on TV. But I think, I mean, it's kind of compelling. I kind of call his walk, you know, just, it's so funny. I kind of call his walk, like, remember when Big Show, when he was Giant, when he was in the NWO, and he kind of tried to have, like, some swag? I think that's what Big Cass is trying to do. He thinks, like, I think he watched a lot. I mean, he has free access to the WWE Network, so I'm assuming he watched a lot of Big Show and was like, I could totally do that, but he just doesn't do a very good job at it. But as much as I hated it at the beginning, it's compelling enough to keep – it's compelling enough to me to keep Daniel Bryan away from the Money in the Bank and away from The Miz for the time being. So I think a little bit of kudos goes to Big Cass. I mean, he kind of was the Marty Jannetty in him and the Enzo thing. I guess real quick on Enzo – Justin, if he was end up in the Impact Zone, would you be okay with that?
I wouldn't have an issue with it. I mean, Enzo would be a big get for Impact. He's obviously a name. He's a guy that can talk. He can work with whoever they throw him with, as long as he's not a main eventer. I mean, the guy was cleared of all charges by the police, so it's not like he was brought to trial and found not guilty. The guy was completely cleared, so it's not like, I don't even think you have to worry about a bad business, you know, decision or sponsors or whatever worrying about that. So it'd be a name for Impact to get, and I think I said, as long as he wasn't somebody that'd be main eventing your shows, which he shouldn't be, I guess it would be probably okay.
Yeah, I mean, if they do sign him and they bring him in, as long as he's not beating Penta and Austin Aries and all these guys, then I won't have any problem with it, which I don't think Don Callis would do. I think Don Callis might consider him like his little funny guy that he can keep around and kind of hang out with, like Guido and those guys. But yeah, real quick, I think Big Cass is, as much as I don't like him, as much as he's kind of goofy and stuff like that, he's done okay. I think Daniel Bryan's like, all right, we could get some heat on you, man. We can, you know, we can keep this going until Daniel Bryan moves on to better things, like him and The Miz, and, you know, eventually being after the WWE title, because, like, he mentioned that on, you know, SmackDown, that's, you know, he pretty much said he wants to be the champion. So I think that's kind of like, okay, well, the WWE is eventually going to go that way.
But for right now, I think, you know, I think Big Cass might be better served in Impact Wrestling than Enzo.
Moving on to some injury news real quick. It was reported earlier on Friday that Randy Orton underwent surgery for a meniscus injury and will be out of action probably for a few months. I mean, if you know anything about knee injuries, meniscus injuries are injuries that, depending on the type of tear, you can work for it or play a sport on it for a long time until it pretty much bothers you. And of course, Randy Orton decided to get that taken care of now, so he's conveniently missing the European tour, but that's whatever. I mean, I wanted to use this kind of point to talk, this place to talk about, you know, exactly. Randy Orton's a guy that's been around now. I mean, you go back, it's over, I think it's 15 years at this point, and you wonder kind of what his legacy is in the WWE. I mean, if we had our founder, our HTC Wrestling founder, Matt Herrick, on the show right now, he would be praising Orton. I know he's a big Orton fan, and, you know, he is a very smooth, crisp wrestler in the ring, but I sit there and wonder, I almost wonder if he didn't fully live up to his potential. I mean, obviously the guy's been a mainstay for the WWE, he's a main eventer, he's a guy you could throw in a main event with no problem, but you wonder if he could have ever gotten to the John Cena-like level that somebody like Cena is at. I mean, I'm not going to say he could have been a Rock or an Austin or something like that, as far as the Attitude Airlines go, but I always felt like Orton was a guy that was groomed to be Cena before Cena got to being there. And then it seemed like, whether it was just injuries or just maybe not full effort, and of course, you know, back when he first came up, there were rumors about him kind of not being the most, you know, best trooper backstage and having an attitude problem. There was always the rumors that he was supposed to beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania 21 and end his streak, and that didn't end up happening. So, you know, he main evented WrestleManias. He's won numerous WWE titles. He's had hundreds upon hundreds of matches with John Cena. But I always think, you know, as good as Orton is, and I'm sure when it comes to all-time WWE, like, people, if you're putting together a list, he's in the upper tier as far as namesake go and value, but I always feel like he's a guy that could have been in the top 5, the top 10 even, as far as people in the WWE ring, and he just, for some reason, never fully lived up to his potential because of so many various factors. I don't know what you think about Orton, Cam, but that's just how I've always felt about him, is that he was supposed to be Cena before Cena came along, and then Cena outworked him, outdid everything with him, and he ended up taking that top spot and pretty much never relinquishing it.
I mean, as far as WWE guys, I mean, just strictly looking at, like, Legend Killer stuff and, like, as many marquee matches he's been in and the legacy stuff with Batista and Triple H and Ric Flair. And I mean, I guess in my opinion, he's a top 25 WWE superstar of all time. I'm not saying from a wrestling perspective, or not, even though I think he's well above average in the ring, I think he's a great job. Especially the last few years, he's getting older. I think he's got more comfortable with himself where he can, like, make fun of people on the internet. You really didn't see too much of that from Randy Orton back then, but now, you know, he loves the whole dive thing and all that stuff. I mean, I thought it was really cool of him to, like, go back and forth, when, you know, when it's all fun between, you know, the wrestlers. I'm assuming they were DMing each other back and forth on Twitter, saying, all right, let's say this back and forth to each other. But yeah, I mean, he has a great legacy. I think, yeah, I mean, him and John Cena, it's that time where, you know, I've said before, Undertaker's, I mean, who knows what the Undertaker, he's going to wrestle for freaking Flair. Just when we think he's done, he's wrestling in Saudi Arabia in a casket match against Rusev. The Undertaker, you have, you know, no more Shawn Michaels. You don't have Flair. You don't, I mean, Triple H is pretty much turning into a once a year. He's really taken hold of, like, the day-to-day stuff. So I think we're really going to see him really when it's completely necessary and WrestleMania. So a lot of the Attitude Era guys are gone. So you're going to have John Cena, Randy Orton, you know, the guys from the PG era, if you will, kind of transition into those WrestleMania roles. Chris Jericho, guys like that, will come back and, you know, put over, you know, talent and things like that, where, you know, I think that's totally fine. Randy Orton's probably a millionaire, you know, 30, 40 million, 50 million times over. You know, he's can live his life. And, you know, I know he has a child now, so let him take time off. I was always of the impression, like when Dean Ambrose eventually comes back, it's going to be the hugest pop in the world. So when Randy Orton takes time off, you mean, he might not get, like, a humongous pop when he comes back, but it's one of those things where it'll be better for his character when he doesn't stay, or when he stays gone for a month or so.
One last thing before we go, Cam, and I've been meaning to ask this in the last few shows, and now that more stuff's happened over the last few weeks, I figure it's a good time to ask this here. The John Cena and Nikki Bella breakup, is it a work or is it a shoot and reel?
That's tough question. I mean, you see Nikki Bella, I didn't watch the video of her responding to people saying it's a work, and, you know, there's, I guess they shot the breakup for Total Divas or something along those lines. I don't know. It's just one of those weird things where he proposed to her at WrestleMania and then they kind of broke up. And then John Cena says, you know, I'll always love Nikki and I want to father her kids and all this really weird crap where if it's a work, it's one of those like weird Montreal screw job things where they're just like screwing with everyone's head. You know, I hear the rumors that Nikki still stays at his house in Florida. And I mean, I don't know. If we're being honest, like, I don't really give a shit. I mean, I saw the picture of John Cena with like some facial hair and like taking a selfie with all those girls and what looked like he was in a bar, maybe like a hotel bar or something along those lines. And everyone making the memes about, you know, him being like a college art student and all these like weird things and all this stuff where, I mean, it's John Cena. Obviously, he's not ready to settle down. I mean, he's making movies and he wants to do his things where I think Vince kind of was like got into his ear like, yeah, we're going to do this. And I don't know, the whole what was it, like 100-page like non-disclosure agreement and all these things that Nikki Bella had to sign. I mean, I don't know. If it's a work, it's very involved for John Cena, and kudos to him.
Yeah, I've gone from thinking it was real to then hearing about some of the stuff and all of like the gossip magazines and websites, then thinking it was a work, and then now, you know, they're going, if this is really, you know, something they're trying to fool people with so they can get ratings for Total Bellas, they're going to the extreme of extremist lengths to try to convince this stuff. I mean, they could end up getting back together. You see that happen with couples all the time, but I'm starting to lean more, like, if you would have asked me this last week, I would have been like, no, it's totally worked. This thing is totally fake. They're going to get back together and it's all for ratings for Total Bellas. But the fact that now apparently I have this come out that they actually did cancel a real wedding, you know, 1 week beforehand, you know, that is money for people, assuming that the wedding part was real. I'm starting to think that this actually did end up happening and people, like, you know, the fact that they keep going over and over and there's interview after, like, every day there's a new interview with one of these people, whether it's John Cena or Nikki or Brie or somebody related to the family. I'm starting to think that this actually is something that did happen in real life. And if they reconcile and get back together, that's great. You know, I'd be happy for them. John Cena decides he wants to be a dad, but I'm starting to think, you know, now that this actually did happen and it's not in the realm of, if it was really is a work, they've done put more effort into this storyline than any other storyline on WWE TV over the last 10 years. But that is our show for today. You want to follow us on Twitter at HTC Wrestling. I'm at JC Wonka. Cam is at Cam Doherty. Obviously, I just stick to htcwrestling.com. I kind of redid a little bit of the site there to try to make it a little bit easier for people to navigate and get to stuff. So I hope you like that. All of our news, reviews, columns, anything like that are going to be on there as well. So keep following us on social media. Keep following us online. And for my co-host Cam, I'm Justin C. signing off. And we will talk to you next week.